According to the United Nations, the number of Syrian refugees reached a 2 million milestone yesterday, up 1 million in the last 6 months. With approximately another 4 million Syrians displaced within their country and many more expected to be so in the coming months, the refugee crisis continues to evolve as civil war in Syria escalates in its third year. Today on the show, we'll be talking with Gerald Brown, director of Utah's Refugee Services Office, about where these refugees are going and about refugees in Utah. Gerald, thanks for coming down and speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's an important subject, and I appreciate your addressing it.
So to start, I wanted to talk a little bit about the crisis in Syria. A tenth of the Syrian population has fled that country. I know they're primarily going to some of their neighboring countries, but I'm wondering if you are able to talk about where they're going and what's happening to these refugees.
Well, according to refugee sources, we think that there are, as you said, about 4.25 million internally displaced people now. We think that there are about 45,000 in Turkey, 675,000 in Lebanon, 515,000 in Jordan, and 160,000 in Iraq. Also, if I might add, you mentioned 2 million refugees now. They expect that there'll be 3.25 million by the end of the calendar year.
These are enormous numbers. I know that, for example, in a camp in Jordan, there's a camp that was opened 6 months ago, and now it's filled with hundreds of thousands of people, 120,000 people. I think it's the fourth largest population center in Jordan.
Yes.
What is the definition of a refugee?
A refugee is a person who has had to flee their home country because of persecution, either past persecution or a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the persecution has to be on account of one of five grounds: political opinion, race, religion, nationality, which often means ethnicity, or the most complicated one is particular social group. So it has to be on account of one of those five grounds. It can't be a general civil discord, can't be natural disaster. It has to be one of those five. So that's the definition. You were speaking about the different country. We call them countries of first asylum. That's where the person flees to. And whether the country calls them refugees or visitors or displaced people, the sad fact is that most countries of first asylum don't want people to stay there permanently. They'll let them they'll let them stay for a while, but they don't want them to become citizens and work legally. And that's a big problem, obviously.
So approximately 1% of refugees end up being resettled in a third country. You talked about that first country
of first asylum.
Mm-hmm. If 1% of refugees end up being resettled in a third country, how does that happen?
Well, there are three durable solutions to refugee situations, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. The first and the preferable one, obviously, is that people are allowed to return home because country conditions have changed and it's safe to go home. So that's everybody's preference. The second durable solution is that they are allowed to permanently resettle in the region, in Lebanon or Jordan, in this case, Turkey, Iraq. That rarely happens because the countries of first asylum tend to be poor countries. They have their own problems, and they don't want to contemplate the long-term drain on their resources. So that's the second solution. The third solution is third country resettlement. As you said, less than 1% get that. Doesn't help many people, clearly. It is important, however, because it's often used to preserve first asylum. So the U.S., for example, will tell Thailand that if you will allow these people to stay in the camp instead of pushing them back to their country, that we'll take a certain number and that we will you know, also help with resources to help people there. So, and third country resettlement is obviously helps a small number of people, often the people that need it the most.
So what I'm just thinking about the process by which refugees arrive here in the United States.
How does
that happen?
Well, first of all, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees determines who's a refugee and who isn't. There are 16 million in the world right now, according to the United Nations. Our Department of State, the executive branch, in consultation with Congress, chooses 70 to 80,000 people that'll come here each year. The rest of the world does slightly less than that by a similar process. So we have a priority system by which we choose the people. Mm. We rarely accept people from a conflict that is less than 5 years old.
Okay.
So it rarely happens quickly because we want the other solutions to have an opportunity to kick in. Yeah. Once we choose the 70,000, all of those people are connected to one of nine nationwide nonprofits officed on the East Coast, all of which have national affiliate networks. And in Utah, two of them have affiliate offices. It's the International Rescue Committee and Catholic Community Services.
Okay.
So all of the refugees that come to Utah come, all of the new ones that come to Utah come through one of those two organizations. Refugees also come here via secondary migration, which means they could be resettled in Wisconsin, decide that they'd rather be here for one reason or another, and then move on their own. And that's their, they can do that.
But that's not something that agencies will be working with. You talked about the number 70,000. I want to go back to that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the sort of cap on the number of refugees that the United States will take?
Well, they determine each year what the high number will be, what the maximum will be. It doesn't mean that they will that 70,000 will get in necessarily, but that's kind of not a target but a ceiling.
Okay.
And that has changed throughout the modern U.S. refugee resettlement program, which began in the 70s with Vietnam. It's been as high as 200,000 people a year. Right after 9/11, it went down to nothing. So it depends on the year, but 70,000 is a number that we've come to expect.
Gerald, after 9/11, the number went down to zero. Is that because we were suddenly concerned with? Was that a security issue?
Was a security issue. None of the people involved in 9/11 were refugees, by the way, but the U.S. government and the U.S. people wanted to make sure that no terrorist came in as a refugee. So security measures all over the world were tightened, which is one of the issues why, with every refugee group, they are vetted and vetted and re-vetted by Homeland Security.
Okay. That's part of the process of becoming a refugee.
That's right. Well, or being resettled here as a refugee,
oh,
yes.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise, does the state of Utah have a cap on the number of refugees that it accepts?
Well, not a formal cap. The way it works is that these nine national organizations I mentioned,
yes,
will get a certain percentage of the 70,000 from the Department of State. And the number they get is strictly between the Department of State and those agencies. Then they decide which of their affiliates they want to resettle through. A lot of it's determined by whether the refugee has a relative in the U.S.
Okay.
So if somebody's coming from Somalia and they have a relative in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, then they'll go to an affiliate in Minneapolis.
Okay. But there's not like necessarily a numbers cap.
No. Although the two organizations discuss with me how many they want to bring in, and we talk about it, and we agree on a number.
And that's probably based on what they can accommodate, the budget that they have.
That is based on our capacity to resettle people well.
Generally, you don't start to take people who haven't been in a conflict for longer than 5 years. But I'm wondering, when you have this emerging crisis in Syria, do we then start to accommodate the Syrian refugees? And does that mean that we're going to have to make a decision about not accepting refugees from, say, Iran or other places?
So I think that the number 100 Syrian refugees in the past have come to the U.S., not to Utah, to the United States. It was just announced, however, a couple of weeks ago that the United States had agreed to accept 2,000 Syrian refugees in 2014.
Okay.
And that is a major shift. 2,000 compared to the 3 million that are going to be in existence at the end of the year is not many, but it's still a big shift in our policy.
Is that a symbolic gesture? Does that help? I mean, aside from helping these 2,000 people who we're going to bring in from Syria, does that provide some sort of example to other countries or to the places where they're settled now?
Yes. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees got a group of about 25 resettlement countries and tried to persuade them to take people. And so part of the U.S. acceptance for 2,000 encourages other countries to do it. It also, I think, it gets us involved in a way that the American people get to know who Syrian refugees are. It may start to create support for them. But so I think there are consequences to taking people other than helping the very people you accept.
And so then what happens when they – I mean, you mentioned this actually, that you have these agencies, they help resettle them here in Utah. What is that process? Actually, Gerald, first, you're coordinating that process to a certain extent, but maybe you should tell me what your office does.
Well, let me tell you what happens to refugees briefly, and then I'll tell you what we try to do, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
So the two resettlement agencies, Catholic Community Services and International Rescue Committee, or IRC, will greet the people at the airport. They'll have an apartment ready for them. They'll take them to the apartment. There'll be food and furniture and bedding and clothes ready for them. The first business day, they will usually connect them to services with my department, the Department of Workforce Services, the Refugee Services Office is an office within the Department of Workforce Services. It'll put the kids in school. It'll give orientation. They'll show people around. How do you get on tracks? How do you get on the bus? Here's the grocery store. And they immediately, we start looking for a job. Because a decent job is the best way to help a refugee get settled and to help a refugee integrate. Jobs are huge. Those resettlement agencies do the first 6 months of that stuff under a contract with the Department of State. After the 6 months, up until 5 years, it would be funded by my office from money that I get from the federal government.
Okay.
Not the Department of State, the Health and Human Services. And so I manage that money, and that obviously is more money than the first six, mm-hmm. 3 to 6 months. But the governor has also charged us with trying to coordinate all services for refugees. And those services, as you can imagine, include job development, job placement. English as a second language is huge. Some ongoing counseling.
I was going to ask about that because I think of these people coming. We give them the special status as refugees because they are coming from places where they have witnessed the terrible things, and so you would think that counseling would be necessary.
Yes, it is. It's usually necessary. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
what happens to a refugee in the long run? I mean, I think of the guys who are in the neighboring country who may be trying to just get back, hoping that, you know, the conflict will be resolved and they'll go home. But are the refugees who end up in Utah, do they stay?
Oh, yeah. They stay. I mean, some of them will move to other states, but most of them stay in the state that they were resettled in. These people are survivors. I mean, they are the epitome of human resilience. And so the vast majority figure out a way to make it. They go to school at night. They work a couple of jobs. Their kids are the most important to them, things in the world to them, just like you and I. But it's hard to start with because of language, because of culture differences, because of the refugee experiences, because of being uprooted and put in a totally foreign place. So it takes a welcoming community like we have in Utah to make it work. Mm. And like I said before, I mean, if you had to pick one thing, a half-decent job is it.
I know that, so a refugee after a year can get a green card and after 5 years can apply for citizenship.
That's right.
And then what are the things that people here in the community, you talk about being welcoming, what can we do to help make that transition easier?
The first thing is to befriend a refugee. And if you don't know how to find one, I can help you. People can help by giving them jobs. They're legal to work. They're good workers. They're loyal. They need half-decent jobs. You can tutor English. You can work. We've got kid youth programs that we need volunteers for. You can donate money to our office or to one of our partner nonprofits. So those are just a few of the things.
Wonderful. Gerald Brown, Director of Utah's Refugee Services Office. I want to thank you for coming in and speaking with us today.
Well, thanks a lot. What you do educating people about refugees is really important. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And I'd like to make one correction regarding today's interview. There are actually approximately 450,000 Syrian refugees in Turkey, as opposed to 45,000. For more information about Utah's Office of Refugee Services and its partners, visit refugee.utah.gov. And that's full time for the rundown today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow, tune into the program for a discussion with X-Mission founder Pete Ashdown on his stance against NSA surveillance, administrative subpoenas, and more. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.